Tell me if you've heard this before. It's the coldest winter, the strongest winds, the highest floodwaters. You can't turn on a TV without seeing a weather reporter in waders talking about the latest extreme weather event. And yeah, it's easy to blame climate change, but is it actually climate change? How do we really know? On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are trying to nail down whether or not climate change is involved, and we're asking, what happens after a storm? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we get them to weigh in on the tricky questions that change the way we understand the world around us. And for this podcast, we are off to the office of Dr. Peter Walton, a geography teacher turned fellow with the Environmental Change Institute at the University of Oxford. But those aren't the only jobs on his CV. Peter is also an event attributor.
What people are beginning to ask now is, are we experiencing more or less events? Are we experiencing more severe events, or are the events becoming less severe as a result of climate change? And so I work with the scientists who do all the studies on whether climate change had a role within that event. And I sit alongside them and help do, I suppose, translate the science into language which public businesses, policy can understand and use.
The science of attribution is a relatively new field. It started back in the early 2000s and now has climate academics teaming up all over the world. Together, they are trying to figure out if a weather event is in fact due to climate change or is just a regular old bad storm.
So what they will do is basically run two different climate models. One is a model where we have the world today with all the greenhouse gases that we have in the atmosphere and all the effects that it is happening on the climate system. And then what they also then do is run what they call a counterfactual world. So it's a world that if we didn't have any climate change, if we didn't have this extreme levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the other greenhouse gases that we know about, what would the world look like? And so if we can say, well, actually, we can see that there was a significant change, that the event was made more likely, or the intensity, we can say, well, okay, there is a signal there.
One storm Peter and his colleagues looked at was Storm Desmond that hit the Lake District in December 2015. Video taken from helicopters shows streets just washed out and replaced with brown, muddy water.
The bottom line is that there was a hell of a lot of rainfall in a very short space of time, falling in areas which had already been experiencing quite a bit of rainfall. And the ground was waterlogged. It fell in urban areas. It fell in the upstream in river catchments and ended up flooding and causing an incredible amount of damage.
About 5,200 homes in Cumbria and Lancashire were just flooded. An estimated £500 million, yes, billion pounds of damage was caused by the storm. So to analyze Storm Desmond and figure out if this sort of flooding was going to be more likely because of climate change, Peter says climate scientists decided to run the data from the storm through the two computer models.
So there are four answers that you can give when you do an analysis. So you can say that event was made more likely as a result of climate change. That event was made less likely as a result of climate change. We're uncertain, or there is just no clear signal. So the headline message was that climate change had increased the likelihood of the extreme levels of rainfall happening by about 50%.
Now, after Peter and the researchers had this information, they were able to then take it to community groups and the government and say, hey, let's make some policy and try help some people.
Which is where we can start saying, well, okay, we know where you live is going to be affected by floods. You know, we have a historical record to show this flooding, you know, has occurred. The likelihood is you're going to carry on being flooded. So why don't you take measures to protect yourself, such as raising sockets, making things easily movable, so all your valuables are upstairs rather than downstairs, etc. You know, do you have an emergency kit that's easily accessible when you know a flood event is going to be possibly happening? So you can talk about those adaptation measures.
And event attribution is actually saving lives. Back in May 2015, India was hit with a severe heat wave. At least 2,500 people died across the country from temperatures that went as high as 48 degrees Celsius in some regions. The state of Gujarat was hit pretty hard. And afterwards, it worked with climate scientists to figure out if more heat waves were more likely and how to prepare for them.
And so they set up a heat wave plan around that to try and support the people within the state. It's a rural state. It's relatively poor from that point of view. A lot of reliance on agriculture. As a result, when the next heat wave hit, the early warning system was put in place. The action plan was implemented in terms of advice was given to the people who needed to know, particularly those more vulnerable people living on the streets, etc. And as a result, there was a significantly lower amount of deaths as a result of implementing that heatwave plan.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, superb. I mean, it's always exciting to know that we have been able to help people. I know it sounds a slightly woolly thing to say, but I mean, it's one of those things. It's all very well sitting in an office and doing your work, but if you know that actually it can be saving lives or it can be doing some sort of good, then yeah, you know, it's a nice feeling.
Now, there is one major challenge facing this group of climate scientists from running all of their models: computer space.
We are running more and more analyses on these events as they happen. What we're trying to do is make them as close to real time as we can make them. Obviously, running computer models takes time. So what we want to be able to do is to get an understanding, I mean, ideally, as the event is going on and unfolding, but that's probably too quick a turnaround. So what we want to try and do is, well, okay, once the events happened, we then start running the models. Once we've run the models, we can get a robust answer, then we can make an assessment. And we're getting pretty quick at doing that.
But there is a way of getting quicker. And no, it is not having millions of pounds, although, let's be fair, I'm sure that helped. No, the University of Oxford's Environmental Change Institute, Oxford's e-research center, and Atmospheric, Oceanic, and Planetary Physics decided to use the internet to borrow unused computer power from all over the world. It's through a site called climateprediction.net, and it's a distributed computer networking system, which is just kind of fancy talk for using many computers to solve lots of little problems rather than one big supercomputer to solve one big large problem. Peter says with climateprediction.net, you, yes, you listening to this podcast, can actually help climate academics.
And we have thousands of people signed up for this, and it's just a question of going to the climateprediction.net website, and you download a simple piece of software that allows the models to run in the background of your computer. It doesn't affect your computer in any way, but what it does allow us to do is that we can then run a computer model thousands and thousands of times, which makes any outputs that much more reliable, because we've run it, you know, rather than just once, and that could just be a freak result. If we run it thousands of times, we know that we can start building up a more robust picture about what the science is doing.
ClimatePrediction.net has looked at ocean cooling, rainfall, heat waves, sulfur cycles, you get it. And it also lets climate academics interact with people who are keen to know more about climate change.
What's the point of doing the work? And it's getting people involved, it's getting people understanding the science, and this is one simple way that people can get involved in understanding the science and contribute to scientific endeavors without leaving the comfort of their own homes.
And who knows, maybe with that space on your hard drive that you're not using, you could actually help a climate scientist save a life. And that's pretty cool.
We'll be right back.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons, and a special thanks to Dr. Peter Walton. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Oxford Sparks. We are also on Facebook, doing lots of cool Facebook Lives. And, of course, we've got cool stuff on the website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.